Hello and welcome to the first edition. I think we're recording. It's hard to tell for sure, but excited to be here for the first edition of the Island Dues call-in program. And I'm delighted with my colleague, Alan Dale. And Alan's had some familiarity with these types of programs in the past. Why don't you tell us a little bit about, you know, give us your background and why you think this is a good idea for Islanders to connect and have their voice heard.
Yeah, thanks, Blake. Alan Dale here. I'm a business guy, an entrepreneur, spent a lot of time in the military, so I've got a little bit of background there, worked in the university, sort of come to the conversation, a few different perspectives on things, but most of all, I'm just really intrigued by what's happening in the world and our place in it, and trying to sort of have a conversation around that, and I like the conversation to sort of follow whatever form the person that calls in would like to take, and happy to discuss just about anything.
And we've had, independently, we've had lots of conversations with Islanders. I know Islanders have a lot to say, and there's a lot going on. So we don't need to get into the weeds on issues, although I suspect that's one of the things that's going to be discussed here today. There's lots of positive things, too.
Yeah.
And the goal of this is to give a voice to Islanders, let them call in, have a say. Hopefully people that can have an impact are listening.
Yep.
I think there's not many venues to hear from people, and we want to make this go smoothly. So we'll give everybody an opportunity to speak, but we may have to move on to other callers in our rudimentary technological sort of process here. So bear with us as we feel through it. And I think the phone number is posted online. I'll get that for you. I don't think it's up there right now. In fact, I'll get it as we speak. Alan, why don't you give us a little bit more?
Yeah. So, I mean, there's one, you know, we could start looking at sort of the big international things that are happening in the world. Of course, there's wars brewing all around us. And how does that affect us right here in Prince Edward Island? Certainly a big international conversation to be had at the moment. There's a national conversation to be had. I mean, Canada is positioning itself very differently in the world of late. Certainly the Prime Minister is traveling globally and setting Canada up for success, perhaps, on many different levels. And then how does that all trickle down to Prince Edward Island? What are we doing here at home to sort of be in the conversation and remain relevant as all of this stuff happens around us? I have my feelings on that. I don't think we're doing a lot.
I think that's right? Probably fair. What can we do?
Yeah.
I mean, we're at the mercy of factors well beyond our control, but we should be in the conversation.
I think we should be in the conversation in a whole different way. You know, Prince Edward Island has a lot to offer, and it's just a matter of sort of finding our place in this conversation. Staying out of the conversation is not the answer.
Well, and I think Islanders like to be in the conversation, yep. And this is your conduit to do so. If you want to send a Facebook message note through the site, please do so. Zach will be monitoring that, and you can let us know if anybody has a comment in case we don't see it. If you do want to call in, try to give us a call at 902-500-2464. That phone line is open for 90 minutes from noontime until about 1 p.m. Then we're going to disconnect it because we don't want to be getting calls on it all week. But we're going to do this, Alan, every day. We're going to try it for a couple of weeks, see if the Islanders want to engage in this process. If they do, it's a great opportunity.
So clearly we're not going to be talking math if the phone line is open for 90 minutes from 12 to 1. So we won't be discussing a whole lot of math on the
phone. We're going to let it run a little bit longer.
Okay, fair enough.
But it's not going to be, don't call at 7 p.m. because we don't want to hear from you.
No, I do hope people call in, and really any topic is a fair topic to discuss. I mean, it doesn't have to be about the Straits of Hormuz, nor does it have to be about local politics, but anything goes, and happy to discuss anything and give our perspective, and really it's just our perspective.
And the perspective of the people who call in. What we want to hear, what's on Islanders' minds? We don't have solutions, but we do have an opportunity to have dialogue, and this is something people have asked for. There's lots of things. I mean, the big items that I hear frequently, in fact, I just lost my family physician. Mm-hmm. Healthcare. It's a big issue for Islanders. You know, many people are fortunate enough to have access to care. There's some provisionary solutions like Maple, which is available to me. But there's other solutions that I've explored and other people may wish to explore. What are some other things that you feel people might want to talk about?
You know, on that healthcare side, yeah, as you know, I own the podcast Gale Force Winds, and Gale Force Winds was just in Newfoundland this past weekend as part of the Newfoundland and Labrador Healthcare Foundation fundraising event. And there's a lot of conversation in the room around tech in healthcare. I'm glad that you brought Maple up as a solution, right? And there was a lot of conversation around that and sort of what that means. And this is what I'm talking about on Prince Edward Island. You know, I witness what's happening around us, even our neighbors and within Atlantic Canada. There seems to be a lot of conversation going on. I just don't see a lot of it here. Maybe I'm not paying attention to it, but maybe it's just not happening. Well, that's an example.
Yeah, I think there's conversation. I don't think there's not a lot of conduits where you can have a conversation as part of the problem. So you can reach out to your MLA. What you can do is complain on Facebook anonymously or publicly, and there's lots of chatter. This is a way to have your say and have your voice heard. And I'm pretty sure that we've got decision makers, maybe even politicians that are paying attention to what people are having to say in this broadcast.
Well, they'd want to pay attention, right? I mean, this should be the voice of Islanders. People should call in, and the politicians and indeed the bureaucrats that are beneath them should be paying attention to what people are saying and how that all impacts them. I mean, this is really what the power of this type of thing is, allowing people into the conversation so that not only are they heard in the moment, but their conversation resonates beyond this sort of hour that we're here.
And this hour is resonating more than the 90 minutes. So we will be broadcasting it on YouTube. Yep. So we're recording it. You can check us live. You can also tune in on YouTube. So if you miss it, feel free. And I think you did mention with politicians paying attention. I'm pretty confident that they are. Mm-hmm. But feel free to call in. Even kick things off. If there's somebody listening, take a moment. The number again is 902-500-2464. We'll do our best to kind of organize the call with really limited technology, I think. And as we kind of grow through this, we'll expand. We have a couple of comments there. I can't read with my glasses. Alan, I don't know if you can see anything relevant.
Am I in? You don't have any new volume, it's saying. Yeah, so we're it looks like we got a little bit of a tech issue there going through Facebook.
You mean all that good content has been lost?
No, I don't think it's lost. We can always go over again. Can you hear us now there, caller on there? I see you're typing. I'm hoping that you can hear us. Yeah, this is the problem, right? You start off sort of something new and you got to work through these things, but this is the best part of it. You get to work through it live here with us, be a part of the conversation, and when this thing blows up, you can say that you were the first person to call in. Daniel McDonald, thank you very much.
Hi, all right. Thanks, Daniel. I hope you're – in fact, this is interesting. Daniel McDonald is on a different Due production called The Exchange.
Okay.
And Daniel will be on Thursday. So I'm delighted that you're kind of paying attention and listening to what we're doing on Facebook. And you can listen to Daniel. Our Exchange drops every Thursday. And Alan, you've been on The Exchange.
Yep.
So tune in to Daniel and what he had to say. It's really about the future of Western Prince Edward Island and some young leaders, including Daniel and Tyson Wilson, on where they see the future going for the West. How are we doing for technology? Do you think we've got the... So maybe still having a few hiccups here as we progress?
Yeah, well, while we're working through the tech, why don't we start sort of at, you know, sort of a global level and look at what's going on in the world and talk through some of that right now. You know, we've got a raging war in sort of Iran. We've got commodities held up at a choke point, the Straits of Hormuz. We've got countries that we never thought would be dragged into this conversation, like the United Arab Emirates, now sort of looking at waging war against Iran. And then you've got still things brewing in Lebanon and Gaza. And you've got the Ukraine, which is almost a forgotten war at the moment, right? And all of these things are – how does that impact us as a country? And then sort of you look at the prime minister sort of – moving away from traditional relationships that we've had with the United States.
And forging new ones.
And forging new ones. And I don't know if that's positive or negative. I'm not sure, really. I mean, I look at our relationship with the United States, what we've built over, well, since the birth of our nations, and how strong that is. I think that we can't look away from that relationship any more than we can look away from what the prime minister is doing. So all of those things circulating really impact us here locally, right? And that's really where I'd like to see the conversation go. How are these things all interconnected?
Well, certainly you can see it at the gas pump what the impact is to us locally. And if you haven't been there lately, you probably don't want to go. So try to walk, because the cost of fuel and energy has really accelerated. And that's probably one of the most dramatic localized impacts. So it does affect these international events, certainly affect us locally. And you're right, the Middle East is a powder keg in general, and it's just been inflamed.
But it all spins back to, and when I was on the exchange, we talked about this defense spend. What are we doing with the defense spend? You know, I'm watching now week by week, provinces, municipalities, all leaning into the sectors, leaning into it, whether it's construction, whether it's mining, all looking at how do they position themselves differently. I'm not seeing the same energy level here. Would you agree?
I think there's a couple of organizations or individuals that are well positioned in the defense sector, and you know them well. Beyond that, the opportunity is not being seized. So how does government, if they're the catalyst, how do they support and encourage economies to be built around this? Really, it's once in a generation fiscal opportunity.
Is it government, though, right? Are we too often reliant on that?
Especially in DEI.
You know, so are we too reliant on it and not industry sort of leading this sort of charge themselves? And I'm not sure if I talked about it on the exchange, but I had the privilege of being out to British Columbia for the month of February, and I went to a business meeting in a small part of southern Vancouver Island, Saanich Peninsula, and this was there was 85 business people in the room.
And is there a military component to that particular island?
So there's a lot of military assets on that island, right? But it was amazing how those industry players came together and were discussing how they could position themselves. And there was no government people in the room.
Okay.
And when I asked, you know, like, are you guys going to do that? And they said, well, we don't really have the same level of government funding like you find on the East Coast.
And,
right? And then they went on to say, and we're kind of happy about that. Yeah. So, and that's a very unusual thing to say, isn't it?
You know?
Yeah. But I mean, I thought about that in hindsight and thought to myself, are we locked out?
What?
It's not giving you an audio at all.
Okay. No problem. So,
we can do it without that microphone, Zach.
Not even the iPad.
Okay, no problem. So, we got Facebook is down?
Facebook, I guess Meta have, maybe the province didn't pay their Meta bill.
But, I mean, so anyway, continue that conversation.
We're getting comments, people are trying to watch, but there's no feed.
Okay.
Well, we're talking, but nobody can hear us.
Yeah.
So, this is being recorded.
It's being recorded, and so we're working through the sort of Facebook thing, and I'm glad that the audience is building.
Oh,
and
anticipation.
They might be rioting in the streets out there. Why are we not seeing you?
Well, at this point, we haven't been disconnected by any adversaries.
But at the end of the day, so my point to all of that was, you know, are we relying too heavily on government?
We are, and we always have. And Zach, we do have that little stand that you had a moment ago that might be an option to use as well. Are we recording now live? Okay. So let's bring it back, Alan. We just had some technical difficulties.
No problem.
We're getting a lot of buzzes from people who actually have been watching, and we're feeling through this. This is the first of a daily episode. We have some technology glitches. So thank you for your patience, and thanks for letting us know that we had some issues with the technology.
We're only 10 minutes in.
And we can talk about everything again for those who might have missed it.
Yeah, no, it really, to circle back on it, it was really more a conversation around the reliance on government to drive the conversation. And I'm not sure that that's the wisest approach to take.
But that's the approach Atlantic Canada, and particularly PEI, have become very accustomed to. We want government. I mean, we don't want it, but we've become accustomed to government leading conversation. And you mentioned about the, you know, this independent industry that kind of made decisions in BC. But we do have some examples like the BioAlliance. They've been reasonably independent, although still connected to government. Is there an opportunity for a purely government, industry-led initiative? I haven't seen one. Even the chambers of commerce have good connections into government. So how do you get an independent group of entity businesses to make decisions and drive, particularly in the defense industry?
Yeah, well, I think that it's about sort of the grassroots approach. So there's some players on the island that are sort of well known in the defense sector or starting to be known in the defense sector. I think that it sort of behooves them to take a bit of a leadership role in bringing all of these folks together so people can see themselves a place in this conversation. But I think it's also, it's got to be a cross-sectoral approach. So everybody sits in stovepipes. Everybody sits in stovepipes. And I find that very evident in Prince Edward Island. Certainly when I was working at the university and we were trying to make those connections with industry, it was very stovepiped up. And I think that we need to sort of, as a start, break those down and look at ways that we can better communicate across those things. So, you know, all of these sectors and all of these sort of associations have CEOs. That's a great place to start. Get those folks start talking to one another.
Well, and in this sector, we've got pockets across the island. So the aerospace industry, which is very much centralized in Western PEI, just outside of Summerside, there are examples of companies in Charlottetown that also participate in that industry. But then we've got people in shipbuilding and other, you know, that those are large sectors, but smaller ancillary services that may not be considering investment in defense and have an opportunity just by tweaking how they approach their business model. There's a lot of money. How much money is going to be spent over the next decade?
Oh, the numbers.
Billions.
But it is. It's in multiples of billions of dollars. But there's no, you know, these are just numbers, right? I mean, there's a lot of numbers being thrown around. And in the defense sector, you know, what was $10 billion yesterday could be $30 billion tomorrow on so many factors. So I think focusing on the number is the wrong sort of way to look at it. Just say that this is generational spending. This is a type of spending, the type of engagement with industry we've not seen before.
Look, we just, since we had a bit of a technical glitch, let me remind people again how to participate. So certainly if you're watching on Facebook Live, you can certainly make a comment. Now, we have had some technical inconvenience, so we may not see that. We'll ask Zach in the office to sort of let us know if somebody's making a comment on Facebook Live, and we'd be happy to bring that up and address it. If you do want to contact us, again, we've got a rudimentary technology, but let's try it. You can reach us at 902-500-2464, and we'd be happy to put you on the line, hear what's on your mind. I'm sure Islanders have some things that are a little bit more localized than the Strait of Hormuz or even defense contracts. And the purpose of this, again, is really to give Islanders an opportunity to have their say, and we welcome you to do that. It's the first edition.
It's first time around. So let me ask you then, I mean, if you want to bring it back to home, a lot of turmoil lately in government and interaction within the government, and talk to me about your thoughts on it.
Well, it's a difficult vocation these days to be in government. And I don't think it matters if you're in the bureaucracy or an elected member. It's a really challenging time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the patience of the public have kind of worn thin on a whole bunch of issues. Rising costs, like the impact of fuel and energy, which the provincial legislature and the government can't really affect.
Right, yeah.
But it wears on people.
Yeah.
I think within healthcare, there's little things that are starting to, you know, create an irritant for people, whether you're waiting to get access to healthcare, if you're fortunate enough to have access. So I think there's a whole compounding, you know, list of challenges that are causing people strain. And a lot of it comes back to financial.
Right.
I think it gets deeper from there. So you look at what the government are currently dealing with. They've just come back. They prorogued for a little bit. They're in the legislature. And immediately, the big items in the agenda, I would think, would be healthcare. I would think it'd be energy costs and what's happening with Maritime Electric. I think there's land use concerns and governance through IRAC. These are issues that we've heard, and it's not new. I'm not trying to bait listeners, but these are things certainly that I've heard. We've had recently some changes in cabinet, changes in the legislature. That would be new members coming in to new portfolios and some members exiting, and specifically Jill Zarsenow, who unfortunately was forced to resign. Or I don't know if it's unfortunate, but he was resigned earlier this week, and that's a hot button topic, I think, for people. So, yeah, these are the issues, I think, that are day-to-day, and I think across the globe, but certainly in the North American context, financial has a big part in that, where some people.
You know, and those are huge issues that you just laid out there that are local, that touch just about everybody here in Prince Edward Island. What can a government do to navigate? I mean, this is complex. What you just described is incredibly complex, but still, the government has to somehow resonate with the people that put them there. What would the recommendation be?
Well, you know what? You've got to look at practically. We've elected 27 people through a popularity contest. These are people who represent their communities and their districts. They may or may not have the background to manage the portfolio to which they have elevated themselves to. So then you've got to look at the bureaucracy. And that, I think, is a cornerstone. So when issues come up that affect Islanders, the people in the front line are the elected members. And that's today. It's the government, progressive conservative government, and the opposition parties are holding to account. But the bureaucracy is really where I would think the intellectual depth resides, and the knowledge on the specific portfolios. And that's who I think the Islanders have to lean on to say, how do you make our life better? And are you making the right policy decisions to ensure that people are feeling better in a difficult time, because it is a difficult time. Now that all bubbles back up to the MLAs who represent the government who's governing and the cabinet ministers who are responsible for their portfolios. Without a good solid bureaucracy, I think, you know, that's where the buck kind of stops. Although you don't really hear or see the bureaucratic engine very often, because it's represented by the government.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I mean, how can you expect the bureaucracy to be in touch with what's going on if there's a layer between?
And direct it too, right? Just look at Health BI. Mm-hmm. That has been a directed issue.
Yeah.
Concerning Islanders, I'm sure.
But I like the way you sort of say this is sort of where we need to steer the conversation. How do we set those folks up for success? Because they are indeed pulling the levers.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
How do you do that? How do you get this?
To empower the bureaucracy and not have them obstructed by, and look, we live in a parliamentary democracy. Mm-hmm. So you're always going to have the levers of the elected members and the governing party and government who are going to try to implement their will. And the government have been elected based on, you know, a policy platform they put forward, and Islanders have selected that. So the bureaucracy are a little bit hamstrung in that they have to kind of adhere to whatever it is the government was elected to present. But, you know, the challenges are big. And I kind of think that government can compound the challenges. We can get into some of those issues. But, I would have comfort, at least I would hope, that the bureaucracy has the empowerment to push back on bag policy, make corrective action where it's required, and not get to a point where there's a quagmire, which often governments get themselves into, and that results in frustration of the electorate and government change. That's just a normal cycle. But I do feel that the compounding challenges that Islanders are facing today is a bit unique. Mm-hmm. So it's right at the fuel pump, the cost of milk, which is little control over, access to healthcare, which we may be a generation from fixing that. One of the examples we use, because we do healthcare recruitment, not much in PEI actually, but other places, you know, it takes 20 years to make a 20-year-old. So you can't just fix healthcare immediately because we're not putting enough 20-year-olds into the medical system to come out the other end. Now, you've done medical recruitment, mm-hmm. and this is an interesting part of your background, where you have recruited people to go to some of the most difficult places like Afghanistan.
Yeah.
Yet it's a challenge to find medical professionals and deploy them domestically in Canada.
All right. It's a huge problem, right? Across the country, but you see that some regions are having better success than others. And a great example of that is British Columbia at the moment. British Columbia saw what was happening in the United States. They took that opportunity to reframe the conversation around British Columbia and why somebody might want to come there to work in British Columbia, to live, to raise their family at this tumultuous time south of the border. And they've had tremendous success doing it.
And that was an organized, because I know PEI have benefited from a few people who've trickled over, but I don't know if it's been orchestrated, nor do we have the financial capacity to really market effectively.
Well, I don't know about that. I mean, this is sometimes our biggest marketing tools are what's around us. We do have an awful lot to celebrate. We do have an awful lot of success within the province, within the medical community, and these stories need to be told. British Columbia, I think, and the numbers that I've heard, was around $5 million is all they put into this program to recruit doctors, and not only doctors. I should
That's less than an NHL contract.
Well, so, but it wasn't a lot of money, but more than the money, it was, I shouldn't say it wasn't a lot of money. That's a flippant thing to say.
But how important is self-care to Islanders? It's a small consideration for what the expectations are.
But it was more the direction. It was more the desire to do it. And I think that sometimes is as important as sort of fueling it behind, because there's many regions, many areas that had to step up to support that British Columbia effort, and it wasn't all financial. So I think that there's a missed opportunity, right? And Ontario could have done it, Nova Scotia could have done it, PEI could have done it, but only British Columbia did. And they're having great success at it. Now the others are having some side effects, right?
Yeah. I mean, if you do nothing, you're going to benefit a little bit because things are so erratic in some locations.
Yeah. But anyway, I thought that was a great example. But so back to the healthcare thing. I mean, yes, it's a challenge, but are we leaning into technology enough in the healthcare side? Are we looking at other ways to do business? Like you talk about sort of virtual healthcare. You know, I know that Newfoundland has got 3 virtual healthcare systems all running together as one.
Is this part of the government or are these independent private?
These are private companies.
But supported by government?
But they're contracted by the government to provide certain services.
Yeah.
And it seems to be working very well. And they're not poaching from the physician pool.
So you look at the geography of Newfoundland. Even the peninsula is freaking big.
Huge.
So, but then you add in Labrador and the disbursement of people.
Right.
Why can't PEI, with its size and scale, not be more effective than Newfoundland?
Sometimes this is a mindset, right? What is sort of a geographical challenge to Prince Edward Island is quite often it's not even conceivable when you think of Ontario or Newfoundland or Quebec or these vast sort of lands that they have to cover. But in Prince Edward Island, we sort of see the geography differently. And I find it a little bit unusual as well. Like when I hear people talk about, even we talk about at the beginning of the show, up west they're doing this, down east they're doing this. I mean,
and they're mutually exclusive. They don't probably talk too much.
Right. And so it's a very interesting thing. And I'm not suggesting that there's not different ways of doing things west and east. Of course there is.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, we need to understand that we are not that large. And in fact, the fact that we're not that large, that is often cases our strength, right?
Unless we over have too much capacity.
Yeah, it could be that too, right? Yeah, yes, there seems to be a lot of that as well. You know, I find
too much capacity distributed too evenly.
Yeah, for sure. And it's healthcare is a challenge. And so I go back to that question, like what can government do with all of these choppy things, these conversations that are happening? How can they position themselves so that, and it's not about getting reelected, but how can they position themselves to truly help Islanders? Because these folks, as you know, they didn't do this. Because they didn't want to help Islanders. They all want to help Islanders.
Yeah.
It's sometimes they get caught up in this series of complex problems that it's very difficult to navigate.
And I think you get defensive.
Yeah.
I agree. So I was on the Indemnities and Allowance Commission. And I think universally, everybody who runs for politics does so for the right reason. But once you get into the system and you recognize that you're being assaulted, verbally assaulted in the legislature, appropriately so, by opposition, and you're challenged. And the idea, the purpose of opposition is to wear down government, so you get a change in government. I think that your skin hardens, you get defensive, and then it gets more difficult to have transparent conversations, perhaps that are difficult, but maybe what's required. Yeah, please everyone.
And if you leave a void in the conversation, if you leave something unsaid, guaranteed somebody's going to fill that.
Of course.
And that's where the challenges start to arise. And particularly the world that we live in, where information travels so fast and freely,
and sound bites.
and often unchecked.
I mean, we could have sound bites coming back to haunt us.
There's going to be sound bites for sure, right? Where I just said $5 million is nothing. That's certainly going to come back.
But, you know, put in the context of a $1.3 billion Department of Health budget, it is nothing in that context.
Yeah, right. It's small in terms of the spend. But at the end of the day, I think that it's important. That would be my sort of take on the whole thing. When something happens, when there's a complication, when there's people struggling, I think that it's, you know, it's, the government should really step forward and sort of talk about what's happening, explain what they're trying to do, understand that there could be, this might not work, right? It's, that's the other thing I find too,
Blake. Scared to make a decision.
Afraid to fail.
Right.
Afraid to learn.
But entrepreneurs are not scared to fail. You have to.
Well, 100%, right? You have to sort of look what we're doing here now. We're trying something.
And the technology is not cool.
And sometimes it doesn't always work, right? But the point is, we're trying to get into this conversation, trying to invite people in. And it's, it can be choppy. It can be a little bit messy at times. But eventually it will sort of
be refined.
It will correct itself because people will get into the conversation. And this is how this sort of thing works, right? You know, we get people into the conversation. We build a following. All of a sudden, people want to attach themselves to this conversation. Sponsors come on board. They fuel this thing growing over time.
And we have better technology.
And the whole thing becomes more sophisticated, right? But to me, that's the same approach government needs to take. They need to get in the conversation, not be afraid to have a few hiccups along the way, a few bumps along the way, but at least show people that we're trying. We're gonna try something.
And I think if we had clearer endpoints or goalposts or pivot points where we knew where we're going as Islanders, sometimes we don't.
Right.
It's a little bit opaque. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to get behind a strategy when you're not clear what's going. And the other thing that's a concern is myopia. So any government that comes in, it's a 4-year term, some flexibility there based on non-fixed election dates or flexibility of fixed election dates. But, you know, it's probably a 2-year cycle before a government is in prepping for the next election. So you don't have much time to actually do things. Just on one of the comments you made, as we build this and get engagement, we do want people to engage. And feel free to connect to us on Facebook Live. If you put a post on, we're watching that as best we can with my glasses off. So make a comment. We'd love to hear from you. You can also call our direct line, which is 902-500-2464. That's only available during the time of the broadcast, and then the number's disabled. But feel free to call us. We're going to be doing this every day. And the conversations, they are, what would you say? They're just fluid.
Well, they're meant to be fluid. They're meant to sort of go with what's happening in the moment and sort of explore those things. And more importantly, what's happening in the moment for the caller. That's really what we want to talk about, right? So there's things out there that could be affecting them. It's like, if it's as simple as, how do I get in to see, how does Maple work? Right. Well, we'll try to find those answers for you, right? It could be as simple as that, or as like, what are we doing about her moves? How are we getting that oil through? We'll try to answer that.
Well, too. But we've got oil domestically, and this should be the catalyst to accelerate that pipeline.
Yeah.
You know, if we had that crude coming to St. John, we'd be shipping that over to Europe as opposed to having, some of the constraints that we're going to see. And believe it or not, the busy time for energy consumption, I think, is the summer.
Summertime, yeah.
Driving time. So June is a real critical point. And when you look at the futures of oil today, it's about 2 months out. So today, when you see, I didn't check it this morning, but let's say it's $110 a barrel for West Texas Intermediate. That's looking at a June contract. So these are futures.
Yeah, so for the listeners, there'll be many people out there, you say the word futures, it flips off your tongue like nothing. What do you mean by that?
So the way that many commodities are purchased, it's a future contract. So whether that's hogs or oil, the capital markets will look at buying a contract some period in the future. In this case, I think for oil, it's about 2 months out. So what we know today is that a barrel of oil is between $90 and $110. In the future. And the future is what's kind of affecting a lot of decisions, including the capital markets, the equity markets, the bond markets, and Islanders' day-to-day living, because they're going to the pumps today. This is the irony. They're paying, when the price goes up at the pumps, fuel was purchased at a different rate. You're paying for the future price, assuming that the people who've bought it are going to have to pay a different price when they refill their supply. So it's a very reactive cost that you feel at the pump. In fact, it takes some time for the price to actually be implemented. So yeah, I guess that, I don't know if that answers your question.
It does answer the question. So I'll go one step further then, continue this conversation, because I know that you're in tune with it. How does an organization like IRAC respond to that?
That's a good question. So let me, I don't know if we're still broadcasting, and maybe if Zach is watching, come in and confirm. We're going to keep talking. Our screen just went dark, but I presume that we're still live and just maybe no video. So in the case of IRAC, and really what that is, it's a arm's length government body, in fact, appointed by government to administer many things, one of which is fuel. But they have a broad mandate from land use and management to, should have looked at this before I asked the question, to rental control. So very broad mandate, pretty large staff, lots of frustration lately about some of the decisions that are being made there. But in the case of fuel, yeah, they're trying to make decisions based on future pricing.
Mm-hmm.
And really at the end of the day, the decisions are probably being made to protect the distributors, because we need to have reliable distribution of fuel, just as we need reliable distribution of energy. And, you know, there's frustration about Maritime Electric, but, you know, we do need a competent, professional, scalable, reliable energy distributor, which is what Maritime Electric is, despite some of the frustration people might fear of them.
A lot of frustration around IRAC. You know, you can't sort of turn on your Facebook feed and ask PEI or something. And there's a lot of IRAC comes up there a lot. A lot of, I think a lot of misinterpretation of what they do. Or maybe.
They do so much.
Yeah.
And it's a regulator.
And maybe it's just that they're not telling their story enough. Or what is it, do you think?
Well, they don't tell their story. It's kind of this black box. And unless you're called before IRAC for a hearing, which I've done before, you don't really have the opportunity to engage or connect. And it's almost a sterile entity.
Mm-hmm.
So if you had the unpleasant experience of having to engage directly with IRAC, you know, it's a veiled organization. It's a secured organization. If you are called to discuss, it's really like a tribunal. So you go into a courtroom setting and have conversation. Their powers are pretty broad. They certainly have made impact on industries. And this, again, is driven by government policy. So when the government a couple of years ago under Dennis King said, okay, let's come in and let's regulate rental markets, which there's a rational reason for that, in that you want to protect the renters. But I think landowners, and I think the market would agree with the fact that probably went quite a bit too far. In fact, what you're seeing is some of the largest developers in the region have either exited or planning not to develop in our market. So we have a call coming in. This could be my mother calling, or it could be someone.
Well, let's answer.
Let's see who it is and what they have to say. Good afternoon. You're calling on to the Island Dew. I'm great.
Speaker.
You know what? You just dialed into a live podcast, so if it's not related to what we're talking about, which is IRAC, then you better send me a text and we'll catch up with you later. No trouble.
There you go. We've got a guy calling in live right on the show.
And not wanting to talk about what we want to talk about.
No.
So, there, I might have missed a golden opportunity for something, but we had to hang up on him. Again, if you do want to call in, that's what you're going to have to deal with, this kind of latency low-level technology. The number again is 902-500-2464.
You know, it's on the IRAC conversation, Blake. Do other provinces have this type of oversight? And is it right to call it oversight?
It's a regulator. Yeah. They regulate things, and they're responsible for kind of keeping checks and balances and controls. You know, in a pure economy, there wouldn't be a regulator because the economy would drive the decisions. And today, people might disagree, but when I look at this, we have an oversupply of accommodations. And that's a big shift from maybe 2 years ago, where there's a real shortage. We have an oversupply because there's been overconstruction, which has been stimulated by government. We have an oversupply because our population is decreasing. In fact, this month, the Canadian population, for the first time, I think, ever, has decreased.
Oh, wow.
That's a big deal. That's a big deal for our productivity and our GDP. And I'm sure people with an economic background like Mark Carney are looking at this because that's not sustainable.
Right.
So, yes, we have less people, less demands in the system. And there's a period of time where the perception of unregulated population growth did absolutely put strain on infrastructure, such as roadways, healthcare, education, and accommodation. That, I think that shifted. So that's one of the things that IRAC are responsible for. And I think what you'll see is, you know, the rates are going to come down through natural market sort of selection. Like if the people can't rent at the rate that they want, they'll have to drop the price to get people.
And the market will correct itself.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Natural selection.
Yeah. It's interesting that, I mean, I've been to a lot of provinces. I've lived in a lot of provinces and I've never, maybe I've not paid attention, but I don't recall a conversation around a regulator being so robust as it is here in Prince Edward Island.
Well, that's a good question. I don't know if I can answer that, but they're certainly pervasive, I would say.
Yeah. You know, the other thing that I'm fascinated by lately, and that is the education sector in Canada and how it is, in my opinion, not in tune with the conversation around them. And I'm particularly talking about the public education sector. Yeah. I don't know that they're in tune. Maybe I'm not paying attention enough to them. Are they responding enough to
the K-12 sort of institution or the post-secondary?
Well, I would argue that it's all one. Sort of a
continuum,
right? So are they responding well enough to what's happening around them?
That's a great question to ask our listeners. But we'll discuss it and see if people have a difference of opinion. It's hard to say much about the K-12, but let's assume that they're fulfilling their mandate. And I don't know if they are or they aren't. I believe they are. I've got two children exiting the public school system. And for us, it's been rewarding and they've done well and I don't have any complaints about it. And then when you look at the post-secondary, and there's three institutions in PEI, there's French Institution, there's Holland College, there's UPEI. And the academic training of any academic institution is really, I think, to provoke thought. In some cases, and you were involved with the School of Sustainable Design Engineering, you do come out with a profession. An accountant sort of go through a pathway. There are professional designations, but in general, and I have an undergraduate degree in history, it taught me to think, basically, and I'm grateful for that. Didn't train me for much other than I've got a grounding in some historical context, which I can reference from time to time. We might reference it here today.
I look forward to one reference here today from your history degree.
We'll look at the golden age of Octavian and how that translates to the current age of island politics. But then there's institutions like Holland College, which really are designed to train the workforce for the future. And, you know, I think we're operating under challenging environments, particularly because of what we've seen in the decline in enrollment of foreign students. That cohort, it did more than just supply the institution with capital, which they need to grow, but it filled seats. And it filled seats in programs that then became available for islanders. And now with the reduction in students, I forget the numbers, but let's say it's dropped from 800 people to, you know, 40 or something in a two-year cycle. That's a big decline on a relatively small institution, you know, student base. So what happens is that programs that would be available for an island student to participate in now can't be offered or are offered every second year. And I think that slows the education. And again, Holland College are educating to deploy people into the workforce. And they've got some great programs in paramedicine, in construction, carpentry, and you know, all the things that our economy needs to prosper. So I don't know how we got rambled into this, but is the education system meeting the needs? I think in general, yes, and there's improvements that could be made for sure. And there's probably lots of callers out there that might be listening that have specific examples of things they'd like to see improved. But then you take that back at the political or the bureaucratic level. You know, what can, you know, to make a change in the education system or the healthcare system, it's not a quick thing. You need vision, you need time, you need people to buy in. So if the government said, this is where we're going, this is a 10-year endeavor,
And it's rarely a 10-year endeavor.
Well, whatever the timeline, at least people can buy into it and support it. Let's look at the medical school. So, you know, the government, Dennis King, said we're going to have a medical school. And he did it in about 18 months. Not a lot of consultation, not a lot of consideration.
Right.
They put bricks up. They got a building. There's people in it. But it's not achieving its potential because they want to have a medical home, which they can't seem to get operationalized. They've got some students in there. They'll have some more students next year. There's no guarantee of return to service of those people that the province is investing and training and educating and hopefully serving the needs of the public here, but they could go anyplace. So I think when you have erratic or rushed public policy, you get bad outcomes. And I can give you lots of examples of that, but, you know, hopefully there's not one in education because it is, you know, it's a long-term consideration. That's a lot of me talking.
Yeah.
You must have something to say.
No, and I like the way you're talking there about the medical school is an interesting one, right? Because, yeah, it did certainly seem rushed to put it up. And and with a fair amount of opposition from people who were right to be heard.
At the time, but still today with the family physicians, and this is a big pushback.
Right.
How are we going to educate these people if the family physicians are not satisfied?
But I was always a believer in that particular medical school, and I always said to folks that maybe this is sort of what they have in mind now, but I think the school will evolve over time, and it's better that we have it than not and be in this conversation. That's the way I always felt about it.
So I don't disagree, but with an accelerated, maybe, I can't speak, I'm not involved, but it seemed very fast.
Right.
And by, you know, building 20 seat capacity at the same time losing the seat capacity in the traditional neighboring education facilities like Dalhousie, which has historically been a very good partner, Munn, which they have this year, but they want to have in the future. The school is based on Munn curriculum and there's some association there. But, you know, did we move so fast that we lost the relationships we had with other medical institutions and education facilities?
Oh, yeah, or one could argue maybe built them in the case of Munn, but who knows there. But I see the phone lines are lighting up and we have no way to get at them right now because we have one caller so far, and that guy wanted to know if Maid Marian's had corned beef and cabbage tonight. They don't. It's Thursday night, but thanks for the call. But, you know, so the medical school is one thing, and certainly let's talk a little bit about land use. It's a topic of conversation, always on the island. That, in fairness, my only interaction with IRAC was a positive one, in that I wound up purchasing some land on the coastal land that required an IRAC involvement, and I had no idea. But the people that were trying to purchase it were sort of removed from the conversation because I lived
through the process.
I was not navigated at all. I had to do my own research in the background to sort of figure out what happened, but it was a positive outcome for me. I would not want to be those people from Milton, Ontario who didn't get the property for whatever reason. But I was sort of, my eyes were open to IRAC then, and it was a friendly process as a purchaser from Prince Edward Island.
And so did you have an advantage as being from PEI than off? And there is a limit.
Yeah.
So landholders can only own, you know, a fixed amount of land and can't exceed.
Yeah.
But by being on PEI as an islander, that was a beneficial.
That was a benefit to me, right? And I didn't know at the time. And then I started to dive a little bit deeper into IRAC and to understand what had happened. So I was sort of starting from
baseline.
So, but it was interesting, right? And then the property that I purchased was sort of down around Wood Island area.
Okay.
And a lot of controversy that I came to realize when I moved down there in the area.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden you become very in tune with the conversation. And well, what I'm finding is, quite honestly, it's a void. There's a void of knowledge, a void of information from a lot of parties, and therefore the void is being filled. And I'm not sure it's accurate.
Right. Well, you know, I have traveled the province. I was involved with Summerside quite extensively through the chamber. I think the issue of land use is accelerated in Eastern PEI through some specific things, and callers might want to call in, but there's been some concern about land use and ownership. But I think it's right across the province there's concern. There's concern with large operators in agriculture that might exceed the allowable land. So I think the province or some function of government, in this case, Iraq, do need to have some oversight just to control that. Are they doing enough? And that would be, I guess, the issue that callers might have some perspectives on, because there are concerns. And you hear this and you see it on, you'll probably see it in our comments on Facebook here, but, you know, if anybody wants to call in, the number 902-500-2464. So you've had positive experiences with Iraq.
I have. And I mean, I do say that because what it did was it opened my eyes to the Iraq conversation. And then once I sort of made my move down to that part of the island, it opened my eyes to the broader conversation around what was happening. And all I found, both on the Iraq side and on the sort of the land use side in that particular part of the island, was just a void of knowledge, a void of information being filled by, I'm not sure if it's 100% accurate. So that's my only comment around that. And I encourage people to call in and shoot holes in that.
Well, form your own opinion.
Yeah.
People might have more experience. Mine is more on the landlord developer side.
Right.
I think there's a little bit too much oversight. That's constraining the market because developers don't want to develop here as a consequence.
Yeah, as I came in here today, I drove by and the innovation hub that was down on the corner here.
It's gone.
Gone.
But that's every government intervention where they try to do something.
Yeah.
In my experience. So I had.
Is there not innovation anymore? What's happening? Like, why is that gone?
It's a different public policy. It changes. So comes back to the long-term strategy of government. They tend to be myopic. They're a little bit reactive. You know, they went to great expense to set this up down in the corner of water, which is a beautiful location. Is it the necessary spot to have a, and it's really built over the DMZ, which is in Toronto, and they've got nice space. It's got visibility. Didn't need to be at that location probably. But it did, what it does do and what it had done is restricted private sector from participating in that environment.
Oh, so?
Can't compete with government.
Right.
So I've observed, I can give you a litany of examples where government come in, they interfere in a process or a sector or an industry. They always exit consistently. I'm not that old, but I'm old enough to see it.
The golf courses and
doesn't matter. They'll come in, they generally screw it up and then retreat. And at the context of that is that government will, once they retreat, industry doesn't want to come back in because they messed it up. Industry's moved on.
Right.
So I think that's one of many examples where government needs to collaborate with industry.
Right.
Back to a previous conversation, not try to lead and not get in the way, and not obstruct progress.
Because on the outside, I mean, and I had, you know, when I was working at the university and trying to connect industry with academia, and particularly on that engineering program, we would have a lot of conversations with the Innovation Center. There'd be up-and-coming companies in there. Now, they were at pretty, you know, early stages and stuff like that. But it seemed to be an interesting collaboration of government, industry, academia.
And the concept is good, just as it is with DMZ.
So why would it have failed?
Well, you need to be in a showcase location that government can put their stamp on. You know, people would go in there and start a business. You don't want to leave. It's palatial.
Right.
Really, I mean, look where Amazon started. When Jeff Bezos started Amazon 30-some years ago probably, I mean, his office was sawhorses and doors.
Right.
That was his – and for many years, well after he became successful, that's in great contrast to going down to a palatial bubble – on the waterfront, where people want to get in. It's like Veteran Affairs. You want to get in, you don't know what's going on in there, but you want to get inside the institution. Not everybody can get in. So it's almost, exclusionary to some extent. But what you need to be is in a dark ditch someplace where people want to crawl their way out of it.
Want to get out of it.
Get out of the primordial swamp.
Interesting.
And create something.
Interesting that you put it that way. That's interesting, right?
Well, because it may or may not be consistent with others.
No, because I look at the, you know, in Newfoundland there a couple of years ago, they started a new innovation hub over there.
The waterfront?
No, what they did was they took an old Rona. And they converted an old Rona into
a huge space,
right? Because they wanted to build space as well, right? So they wanted companies that had to build products and stuff like that.
Yep.
They wanted an ability for companies to house things in there, move things in there, ship from. It was a very good idea, and I'm watching it unfold in Newfoundland at the moment. And while the government is involved in it, quite honestly, all the government keeps saying is we need them to be on their own. We need them to, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And what they're sort of suggesting is get all the sectors, get all the associations under one roof.
Right.
They want them all under one roof because they know that if
incubation collaboration is going to occur,
it's a collision, right? So they put mining in there. They put mining with tech. They put tech in there with energy. Right. They put energy in there with defense. And so all of these people are now under one roof. And the, and there's companies that are forming because of it. And there's technologies that are forming because I like their approach.
Yeah.
And they've got a board now, and sort of the board is driving the thing. And
a board's a big part of it. I think they did have good people at the zone, but even still, it started as, I think you were there for a few months, maybe six months, and then you're supposed to be kicked out to the wild.
Right. But it makes it hard.
Then nobody wanted to leave.
So this has always been my challenge, right? I find that I enjoy government being in the conversation to fuel things.
Let's step away.
You gotta as quick as you can.
Absolutely.
Get out of there as quick as you can.
But they're compulsed to stay because they want the photo op.
Yes, but also accept some risk, accept some failure. I'd rather see the government invest in 10 companies and 9 of them fail, but one of them become very successful, than sort of trying to trickle out funds across 20 companies or 100 companies and keeping them on that drip.
They're choosing winners at that point.
Right. So for me, I'd like to see the government to accept risk a little bit more. And maybe I'm talking out of my hat. Maybe they have a mandate.
But that's where the bureaucracy needs to do it, not the political level.
Right.
And look at lots of examples of the political level getting too deep into the weeds on these things. I want to just comment again. I'm getting a lot of texts, and which is awesome. But we'd like people to either post on Facebook Live during the broadcast.
What are the techs saying? Are they saying we're talking too much? Or
no, they want to hear it. They're enjoying it, but
they want to hear you do math again.
They don't want to be heard. So,
okay.
But you can be heard either by posting through Facebook Live or calling us. It's 902-500-2464. We're getting close to the end of the first broadcast.
Yeah. Is there some sort of a financial award for the first caller? Or is it just sort of you get that?
Well, you will be known forever. In fact, we could name the call-in segment after the person calls.
I would love somebody to call in here and engage us in the conversation. There's a lot to talk about, and this is, again, just new, just starting off. And for anybody that has ever listened to the Newfoundland call-in show on VOC 590 VOCM radio, it's an AM station.
Hey there, I think, is it Anita on the phone? Hi, you've got a complaint? Can I put you on the speaker? Here.
So we got a caller coming in here now.
Let me get you on speaker. So Anita, this is a rudimentary attempt at technology. I'm just going to hold my phone up to the microphone so that you can be heard. But you have something to say, so please let us know.
Yes, so I'm just going to calling in to complain about our grocery prices, how people have to choose between eating, driving to work, or other expenses like medical expenses and stuff like that, and how our minimum wage won't even help cover even a half of that. If you have to choose, like, how can you choose?
I think that's a real challenge that we discussed very briefly a half hour ago, Anita. It is, how do you get around this? I mean, costs keep going up. The price of fuel continues to go up. And I know the grocery store, nothing's going down. I looked the other day, so meat, I heard, has gone up 25% in the last number of weeks. And a lot of that has to do with fuel transportation. So now, the minimum wage did just go up, but I agree with you, Anita, it doesn't keep pace with the cost inflation. The cost of Islanders. What do you think? Is there a solution? What can be done?
I don't know. The government needs to step in and do something because, like, as far as I'm concerned, they're not doing anything to help. Like these little things that they're doing, like a grocery rebate and workers' benefits and carbon tax rebates. Like that's not enough.
Yeah.
Anita, are all of those things too broadly focused across? Like if somebody's making $100,000 a year, perhaps they should not get those type things where people that are making less should get more. Do you feel that would be a better approach?
No, like I don't think other Islanders that are making more than or making up to $100,000 should not get them. But the government has to come up with some kind of balancing system there that, you know, where people that are lower income or just barely surviving on minimum wage, they need to help them out a bit more.
Yeah. And
we've seen, I've heard examples of people, you know, two people, like a spouse, two spouses working at good pay that still can't make ends meet. And you look at the inflation over, really from COVID, from that period forward, it is just accelerated. And early in the program, you know, we talked about the challenges that households are facing and the pressures. I do feel that it comes back to affordability. It's a huge issue. And I think to Alan's point, government are trying to make small interventions to offset this, but really it can't be offset.
Yeah. Anita, so first of all, thanks very much for calling in, and thanks for sort of grounding us in the reality of this is really hitting people home, and we appreciate that. And you know what? It's incumbent on government to listen to folks and say, how can we do things better? How can we help people that are struggling right now in the moment? How do we get ourselves back on our feet so that we can all thrive together? And I think that's what we'd like to see happen.
Yeah, like I said, we have to make a choice. We either buy groceries to feed ourselves, put gas in the car in case we have emergencies that we need to run to the hospital or get to work, or, you know, just everyday life. And then plus we have to worry about those people that have to pay rent. They have to worry about, can I afford to pay my rent this month?
And I've heard examples of people who have to make the decision between medication or food. And
That's right.
That's not a good decision to make.
No, you shouldn't have to. We're in a modern society and democratic economy. The standard of living is generally good, but everybody's on the margin.
One of the wealthiest countries in the world. Yeah.
Yeah, and not everybody is so lucky to have like a workplace that has insurance benefits that cover your medication, that cover your dental, that cover your eyeglasses, right? And then there's the government also, the provincial government, I think it is, has the medication thing that's in place where you're only paying so much for your medication for prescription. They have that in place, but it's only for generics. You can't get, if you need a penicillin, you can only get a generic brand for your penicillin.
Anita, if you had the premier at the kitchen table or the prime minister at your kitchen table, what would you tell them?
I would tell them they need to get off their little high horse and get off their ass, get their hands out of their back pockets, and help out the Canadians and help out the PEI people.
Anita, thanks for your call.
What they're doing isn't working.
Yeah.
But what they're doing isn't working.
Yeah. Well, I'm pretty confident, Anita, that we've got people listening to this program that are hearing everything that's being said. And I think as this is the first session, we'll continue to do this, and we hope that Islanders get their voice heard. And I think over time, we'll hopefully get some of these decision makers on to share their perspectives. But I really appreciate you calling today, and thanks for being our first caller on this new call-in program.
Thanks, Anita. Bye-bye.
Thank
you so much. I think we all need to be heard.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right, thank you.
Thanks for the call. Take care.
Okay, thank you. Bye.
And that's what it's all about right there. That is people calling in with real concerns, and that's what we're trying to achieve. That couldn't have been a better caller, to be quite honest with you. It levels things out, and we can talk all we want about the Straits of Hormuz, and we can talk all we want.
Or big issues.
This is real stuff happening in Prince Edward Island right now.
And people are affected.
And normally in Newfoundland, when they call in with a complaint like that, they kick it off with, this is not good enough. Right. And you're right, Anita, it is not good enough.
Well, I think what we will do is, and the hope is over time now, we'll get a little bit more feedback. We talk at a high level to try to encourage people to make comments like Anita's. The next time we get together, which is tomorrow.
Tomorrow
at noontime. We'll start off with this, and maybe we'll see. In fact, we'll invite right now any policy makers, decision makers, politicians, bureaucrats that just want to have a brief comment
Yep.
Please feel free to call in, start the program off, and let's keep us grounded in the real issues that are affecting Islanders.
Man, no one's judging you here, man. This is a safe place to call in, get your voice out there, be heard, let people know what you're thinking. And I want to tell you that it all starts, as Anita would say, with the conversation. Let's keep this conversation going.
Well, we've hit the hour, Alan. I don't know. Do you want to go a little bit longer and see if there's anything else people want to talk about? Anything you want to cover?
No, I think we've covered quite a bit here today, and I very much enjoy the conversation. Tomorrow, I'm hoping, and of course, over the course of the next week or so, I'm hoping more people call in and get into the conversation, because that's really what it's all about, is to get people's voices heard. And, you know, maybe along the way, we could solve problems for people as we go along. So that's really the goal.
So I would encourage tomorrow at noontime, share the link with your friends if you were fortunate enough to join us today. It is an important opportunity for Islanders to connect. We're delighted to be here. We're going to do this as long as it makes sense. And thanks for joining through a few little technical hiccups. Like, we're trying this in a shoestring budget. But I think it's important, as Alan said, we're committed to hearing from Islanders and addressing concerns that you have. And if you feel you don't have a voice, use this conduit as a voice. We're just here to facilitate.
Thanks, everybody.
Have a good day. We'll talk to you tomorrow, and happy April Fools.